Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More with Francisco Fribronio Peña. Active citizens build resilient cities. Satellites are an integral part of modern society's way of living and fundamental in adapting to one of the most pressing international concerns of the 21st century, climate and environmental change. Following up on last week's episode, global satellite data can help meteorologists, climatologists, and scientists better understand the interactive roles of Earth's systems, provide better weather forecasts, and predict how the Earth's environment will change over time. On the other hand, high-resolution imagery and remote sensing data obtained from space and aircrafts are also important for several applications. These include tracking animal migration, post-disaster damage, oil spills, glacial change, deforestation, and sea level rising. The big questions are, what is the definition of remote sensing? What are the differences between LiDAR and Landsat imagery? Who is responsible for producing this data? Where can it be found? And what is the difference between a remote sensing specialist, an expert in GIS, and a digital mapper? Welcome to Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More weekly podcast. My name is Heather McLeod, and I'll be your host for today. As a painter, I have seen fascinating images from nature and landscapes all around the world using Google Maps. I would like to know how you could use these pictures to identify climate or environmental changes.
Leonardo da Vinci said, "The human foot is a masterpiece of engineering and a work of art." I will say that satellite imagery is a masterpiece of engineering technology and, of course, a work of art. Its beauty comes from all the amazing landscapes and rock formations from the Earth's surface, but also from the data captured within an image. Let me make myself clear.
I got an idea!
Remote sensing is the acquisition of information about places or objects on the Earth's surface from a distance. These sensors, which are part of the satellite, collect data in form of images. There are different methods. Today we'll talk about Landsat and LiDAR imagery.
Awesome. Can you define Landsat and LiDAR imagery?
Landsat stands for Land Remote Sensing Satellite and represents the longest-running acquired collection of satellite imagery of Earth since 1972. The most recent missions, Landsat 8, completes its orbit every 16 days and has a resolution from 15 to 60 meters, although traditionally 30 meters, and takes pictures of big scenes. Each scene has a dimension of 185 kilometers long and 185 kilometers wide. The images are a unique resource of global applications for ensuring the human impacts in the world. This is open data and is available at the United States Geological Survey Earth Explorer website. Then we have LiDAR, commonly known as light detection and ranging. It's a remote sensing method that uses light in the form of a pulse laser to measure distance to the Earth, generating a three-dimensional coordinate information data file, which includes X, Y, Z, or latitude, longitude, and elevation, about the composition of an area. Picture yourself in an office where you need to make a copy. You put the document into the scanner, then when you click copy, the paper passes through the scanner. This is the same for LiDAR imagery. The satellite has been programmed to scan a particular area. The world is the paper, and during the scanning process, the information is a function of the time it takes for the reflection to be detected by the sensor. That's why it's named light detection and ranging. Once the scanner finishes, the copy is available as a data file in the server.
Hold on a second. You're saying that LiDAR imagery is obtained from a laser, right?
That's correct.
So what happens when it's nighttime, or when it rains, or the sky isn't clear? Does it still work? And why is it that when you look at Google Earth or map satellite images, the map is always clear? Do they have to wait to upload the picture until it's free from aerial obstructions?
Those are very good questions. First of all, let's not mix oil and water. As mentioned earlier, Landsat takes images of the Earth with a frequency of 16 days. By using processing techniques, Google takes the clearest pixels or sections of each image and merges them together to create the most perfect image possible. Now keep in mind that airplanes, helicopters, and drones are the most common platforms for acquiring high-resolution data, with an accuracy of centimeters. LiDAR imagery only provides latitude, longitude, and elevation variables. To obtain the data, the sensor must detect the reflected light by determining the travel time where the reflecting object, for example, ground, a tree, or a car, is located in these three dimensions. Usually, LiDAR data is collected at night, when the air is usually clearer than in the daytime. Unlike other imagery, LiDAR cannot penetrate dense clouds or tree coverage and must be flown during fair weather. So in brief, Landsat takes pictures of the Earth and LiDAR takes coordinates and elevations of the Earth. The collection of Landsat imagery enables users to visualize urban or environmental changes over time.
That's very interesting. Government space agencies provide Landsat imagery, while LiDAR is accessible to anyone that can afford it. Now, if you don't mind, I would like to use your research topic as an example.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, you are developing the flood risk case study of the Tiber River, the second most important river in Italy, right?
Right.
By using satellite images.
Correct.
What is the scope of your research?
Very simple. Large-scale flood modeling using coarser resolution detailed elevation models.
Coarser resolution. I thought high-resolution models were the way to go.
Let me ask you a question. What are the two main differences between Landsat and LiDAR imagery?
The resolution?
Yes.
And
the cost. Landsat imagery is open data, it's free, while LiDAR is not. The potential of open data in this field is huge, and it's a pity that people don't even know it exists. My ultimate goal is to create a methodology that builds coarser or low-resolution models from Landsat imagery and achieves the same results as using high-resolution models for flood modeling. The main advantages of this approach rely on two pillars. Reduction of computational time, which goes from several hours or days to minutes. This is an excellent idea for real-time forecasting. And cost savings, because normally the 50% of the project budget goes only to acquire the data. This approach can apply to any region in the world. Still, it's in its early phases and it needs a lot of work and study in the next couple of years to complete the PhD, but the motivation is clear.
Wow. I'm sure the audience is also excited about your work and the advantages it could represent for countries that can't afford LiDAR imagery to develop effective flood risk mapping. Now it's time to go listen to My Voice 120. We'll be back very soon in communicating disaster risk reduction science and more.
Hi, my name is Andrew Wilson and I currently study at the University of Strathclyde in Glasgow, Scotland. I'm a PhD candidate in mechanical and aerospace engineering and my work consists of improving the environmental sustainability performance of space missions. Surprisingly, the environmental impacts of space activities remains relatively unknown. Due to this, my research involves optimising the design of space missions throughout their entire life cycle to make them more environmentally friendly. In other words, reducing the impacts of a space mission from the moment resources are pulled out of the ground to produce it, through to the launch, use and end of life, so re-entry or the satellite remaining in space. In this sense, without proper management of space activities, not only could we harm our own terrestrial environment, but also cause damage to any of the 1,500 active satellites that are currently orbiting Earth. If left untreated, the amount of debris in space will accumulate and cause a cascading effect. In turn, this could lead to numerous satellite strikes and leave space inaccessible for future generations, which is a big problem considering that we rely on space within our everyday lives for a number of things, such as television, mobile devices, GPS, weather updates, etc. Imagine life without all of that. The best way to think about the issue is by imagining the ocean. We cannot keep throwing rubbish into it and think that nothing is going to happen. As humans, we need to take care of our environment, our home, our planet. For this reason, I'm working very closely with the European Space Agency's Clean Space Initiative to build environmental inventories of space system impacts and develop innovative design techniques for new spacecraft in a way that lessens their overall impact to the terrestrial and space environment. This is a relatively new topic, but I believe that it is a crucial first step to allow decision makers to minimise environmental impacts and define new optimality criteria for the next generation of green spacecraft. It is hoped that this research will contribute to the global sustainability agenda by assisting in creating a more sustainable world through the mitigation of adverse impacts of space programmes and activities during the design process. For further information, please feel free to contact me at andrew.r.wilson@strath.ac.uk. And remember, active citizens build resilient cities.
We are back in Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More. The importance of being environmentally friendly applies to everything, from recycling and reducing carbon emissions to being conscious of the proper management of space missions and satellites.
Andrew and his team are definitely taking the lead in this research worldwide. I believe this is a very important topic for the near future. I mean, just look at Elon Musk's motivation to develop spacecrafts for missions to explore beyond the Earth with SpaceX. Within the next decades, this is going to be possible, and it's vital to be able to handle space waste or space junk to reduce the risk of collision with new and existing satellites. According to NASA, there are more than 500,000 pieces of space junk orbiting the Earth, so without a doubt, it's necessary to seek for solutions.
I'm with you on that. We have previously talked about GIS experts, digital mapping, and now remote sensing. What are the differences between these professions?
A remote sensing specialist is an expert on remote sensing techniques, satellite products, airborne images, drone products, etc. These people determine the best techniques, equipment, and time of day for a particular mission. They may prepare flight plans, configure sensors, apply techniques to collect data in the field, and process the resulting data. A GIS specialist is an individual that works with GIS software to solve problems, present data, and store information. For example, a GIS specialist can analyze spatial data, let's say integrate administrative and statistics with flood maps to understand the amount of people at risk, or perform analysis by using Landsat imagery through time to create heat maps of affected areas before and after disaster strikes. A digital mapper is a person with no specific GIS background that receives specific training to build maps from scratch. This training involves basic knowledge on data, data collection, and middle-level proficiency in the use of a GIS platform to produce maps.
In today's show, we talked about the main characteristics and advantages of using Landsat and LiDAR imagery, highlighting its importance for the scientific community and professionals. Landsat imagery is open data and ready to use just a few clicks away. It's time to raise awareness in this fascinating field so more people can see how beautiful our world is and maybe join efforts in the environmental or risk prevention sciences. Professionals in remote sensing and GIS can be considered as the backbone of the geospatial revolution, transforming paper maps and manual work into digital maps as a result of a technological improvements over time.
Next week, we will discover the professions and industries that are already feeling the impacts of climate change. Don't forget to visit our website, wardoc.unistrapg.it, and social media platforms in Facebook and Twitter as Wardoc or Francisco Febronio Peña. And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.
Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More with Francisco Febronio Peña. Active citizens build resilient cities.